I was born in 1939 in a little town in northeastern Oklahoma near Tulsa, Oklahoma. The name of the town is Cleveland, about 2,500 residents living in this town. I went to grade school and to high school in Cleveland and graduated in 1957 from Cleveland High School. I received a tuition scholarship in agriculture and went to Oklahoma State University in Stillwater, where I majored in or took a science option in agriculture. And my first year there, I worked at the swine barn. There's a little dormitory there, and four or five of us boys would feed the hogs every morning and every evening, and we did that for our room and board. The second year, I went across the road and worked in the small grains research station for a year. But at the end of 2 years at Oklahoma State University, I decided to go to a small Bible college in Long Beach, California, which was called Pacific Bible Seminary, now called Pacific Christian College. I went out there and studied for a year or a year and a half before I began taking some courses at the nearby Long Beach State College, now called the University of California at Long Beach. Eventually, I graduated from Long Beach State College. The year before graduation, I applied and received a Rotary Foundation Fellowship for graduate study in any university that I should choose. And since I wanted to go to Israel, I chose to go to the university in Jerusalem, the Hebrew University. And in 1963, I flew to Israel to begin study at the Hebrew University, arriving on July the 4th, 1963, 17 years ago. I spent 6 years of study at the Hebrew University, and at the end of this time, or near the end of this time, I began working in a language school in Jerusalem, where we were teaching Israelis English as a second language. After 2 years there, I left this school to set up a similar program for new immigrants desiring to study Hebrew. We developed this program at the American Institute of Holy Land Studies, located on Mount Zion, where I still am the director of the Modern Hebrew Language Program, which is one of the programs offered at the American Institute. In 1969, I met Josa, and we were married that same year. And in a moment, I'm going to have her share a little bit about how we met and something about our life since then. After we'd been married about 2 years, we applied for and received permanent residency in Israel. That's a category which is similar to citizenship, which means that as a permanent resident, you have all the rights and responsibilities of a citizen, except the right to vote in the national elections, except the right to vote for the Knesset or parliament elections. As soon as I received permanent residency, I was required by law to appear at the local conscription center or draft board and begin army service, joining the Israeli reserves in 1974, and today I'm a sergeant in the Israeli reserves. But let's go back and ask Josa to share a little bit about her life before coming to Israel and after coming to Israel. Tell us, Josa, something about your family.
I was raised in a Christian home, and in a background that I suppose I could describe as being similar to that of the background that Demo Shakarian comes out of, where our people came from the same village as his people came and under the same circumstances.
Your people came from the same village that Demo Shakarian, the founder of the Full Gospel Businessmen's Fellowship, came from?
Yes, they did.
Your parents?
My grandparents came, and they settled in Los Angeles. And my parents were born in Los Angeles. Went to school there, and met there, and got married there, and settled in Southern California.
They founded a very special and unique church there in downtown Los Angeles, didn't they?
They formed a congregation making up of the people who came from these villages. And it's along the lines of an Armenian Pentecostal type church. And
an Armenian Pentecostal church? I thought Armenians were more or less Catholic in background.
No, we have all kinds. We have most of them are the Orthodox, Armenian Orthodox background, you might call them. And we have Brethren, and we have Presbyterians, and we have Congregationalists. And we have just about 150 Pentecostals all together, I suppose.
But this church is unusual, isn't it? Tell us a little bit about their customs.
Well, it's based probably on old tradition and pretty close to the Jewish tradition, where the men sit on one side and the women sit on the other. And they sing psalms in their services, and they have a leader, I suppose you would say, not a ordained pastor, but lay preachers. And they observe three of the Jewish holidays, and they keep pretty close to these traditions.
Very good. Chosa is a second generation American Armenian, and she grew up, went to high school in Los Angeles, California, in Whittier. But Chosa and I never met when we were both at the same time in Los Angeles. Before we talk about Chosa coming to Israel, I'd like to ask you, Chosa, to tell something about the special love you had, even from a very young age, for the Jewish people.
This is something that the only way I can explain it is that the Lord had His hand on me. I can say from the time I was born or as I was a young girl, because I've always had an interest and a love for the Jewish people, although not understanding it totally. I grew up in a home that respected the Jewish people. My mother taught us to always bless the Jewish people because they were God's special people, but I never had any Jewish friends. We didn't have Jewish neighbors. In fact, I don't ever remember meeting any Jewish people until I was probably in college, where I started working, and then I had one Jewish girlfriend. As time went on, there were several things that influenced me into really realizing that I had this interest in the people, and one of them was while I was in high school, senior in high school, and I was to be studying for my exams. And I walked into the library, and on display on one of the shelves was a book with a big Star of David on it. And so without stopping to read what the title of the book was or anything, I just picked up the book and continued on my way to a table to study. Well, I got involved with this book, and it was a book by Theodor Herzl. And I read the book, and I think I spent 2 days reading the book, ignoring my studies. And at the end of that time, I realized that this is what I wanted to do, was someday go to Israel. He defined the feelings that I had and the feelings of being attracted to these people, of being like gravitating toward them or gravitating toward anything Israeli, anything Jewish, something that goes beyond mere interest. It's hard to explain, except it's just something that is goes deeper than just a mere interest in a subject, in a sports or anything like this. It's something that's very deep.
Tell us about how you used to embarrass your mother when you were a little girl.
I just remember one time, I must have been 5 or 6, in downtown Los Angeles, walking down the street and seeing this man coming toward us, and I pointed my finger at him and said in a loud voice, "Mommy, is that man Jewish?" And of course, this man must have thought what my mother is teaching me, but my mother was very embarrassed. But it was also another indication that I was very aware that there were Jewish people, and I was trying to notice them. I was trying to distinguish them from other people at this young age.
What about the time you found an unusual name in your high school annual?
It was my mother's high school annual. When I was a little girl, I used to look at all the pictures in the annual, trying to see who was Jewish or Russian or whatever, trying to read the last names. And she went to a high school in East Los Angeles called Roosevelt High School. And at that time, I suppose 90% of the student body were Jewish. So when the Jews had a holiday, the Gentiles did too, because there was nobody left to have school. And I came across one name in a picture of a young man named Israel Phillips. And I was so fascinated by this man, this young man in school. His name was Israel. And I just imagined his parents naming this son of theirs Israel. It was such an exciting thing that I've never forgotten. And I feel that this was also an area, an incident in my life that influenced me. The fact that anybody would name their child Israel. Of course, since then, we've met people who are not even Jewish who have the first name of Israel, but at that time, it made a deep impression.
And you used to imagine how the mother would call her son to dinner, didn't you?
Yes, I imagined her going outside and saying, Israel, come on in and eat. And I thought that was neat.
Tell us about how you got to Israel.
I came to Israel twice. First time was in 1966, and I had wanted to come, and I decided to come in that year after I finished teaching school. And I knew for some reason or another I would be there longer than a 3-month period that I had as a tourist. And so I did not sign a contract to teach the following year, although I had no idea what I was going to be doing. And I went over, and I met some people, and I did stay for 10 months. In April of 1967, I became very homesick, and I came home. And when I did come home, then the Six-Day War broke out. In the meantime, I went to summer school and then began teaching again, saved my money, had two jobs. I also worked weekends at a Christian conference center in California called Forest Home. And I worked there weekends and saved my money and came again to Israel in August of 1968. And then I went to work on a kibbutz. I was on a kibbutz for 7 months, and then I came to Jerusalem and found a job, found a husband, got married.
Tell us about the deal that you made with God.
1968, when I was getting ready to come back to Israel, I was sitting in the kitchen of my mother's home reading in Living Prophets. And I was very much impressed how God loved Jerusalem. In Isaiah and Jeremiah, there's so many references to Jerusalem. And I thought to myself, when I go back to Israel, why should I be looking for a place in Tel Aviv? There's no mention of God's love for Tel Aviv or Haifa. It's always Jerusalem. I thought, well, that's the place to go. If God loves that place, that's where I want to go. And then I was sitting there, and I made this deal with God. I made a 3-point deal with God. And I said, when I go back to Israel, and then I stopped because I had to realize that this whole desire of going back to Israel still could be my desire, something that I really wanted to do. And I was a little afraid of that, and I really wanted to make sure it was God's will, so I sort of said on the side, if it's your will, then I go. And then I said, one, I want to find a place to live and a job in Jerusalem. And I thought, well, that's pretty good. Then I thought, well, I'm getting kind of tired of batting around by myself. Two, I want to meet my man and marry him in Jerusalem. And then why not? Three, I'd like to have my first child, a son, born in Jerusalem. Well, I thought that was a pretty wild thing to do, and I
pretty
was
bold.
Really excited about it, and I told my mother, and my mother, being used to my wild statements and things, that I suppose she just pondered these things in her heart, as most mothers do, I think, mm-hmm. when their children do things like this. And I told a friend of mine there where I lived, and she didn't say anything. And I told some other people, and they just kind of looked at me. So I decided that's not the thing you go around telling people, that you made this deal with God. And I just forgot about it. Well, as things turned out, I ended up going to Israel, as I said, in 1968. And I ended up on this kibbutz near Beit Shan. And the time came for me to be thinking about leaving and getting a job. And I'd forgotten all about this deal because I had heard that...
What was the name of the kibbutz and how long were you there?
I was in Kibbutz Mesilot, and I was there about 7 months. I began to wonder what I was going to do after, because it looked like I was still staying in the country. And in the meantime, I met Dr. Bob Lindsay, who was the pastor of the Baptist congregation in Jerusalem. And he told me about an opening at the Baptist house. And to make a long story short at that point, I was to call his wife, Margaret, and ask about it. So a couple of weeks later, we were in Jerusalem, and I called his wife, and it didn't seem like it was the right time to talk about this, as they were very busy. So I said, well, I'll call back in 2 weeks. Okay, that was fine. So in 2 weeks, I called again. And there was still a lot of hesitation and doubt, and I says, okay, that's fine, thank you very much. So I forgot about working in Jerusalem and started concentrating on other things. Easter was coming up, and I was having feelings of wanting to go to Jerusalem to observe the sunrise service at the Garden Tomb. I really had a longing to do this. But I didn't know who to stay with in Jerusalem. I knew I could get off, but I didn't know who I could stay with. It would require that I stay overnight in Jerusalem because of the bus system, and it would take about 2 hours to travel. I received a postcard in the mail from some friends of mine who had been in Israel, and suddenly they came back to Israel and wrote a card saying they were in Jerusalem and I was to come and visit them any weekend, just give them a call. Well, I thought, this is great. I'll just stay with them. So I, during the break, I was working in the kitchen, and during the break that we have around 10 o'clock, I went to the office to get some tokens to make this call. While I was buying the tokens, the telephone rang, and they asked me to answer it, and of course I refused. I figured the people would want somebody in the kibbutz, and I wouldn't know who they were, and then they had to come to the phone in the long run. Well, the secretary answered it, and it turned out to be the very person I was planning to call. And he said, we would like to have you come for Easter Sunday and to visit us. I said, you wouldn't believe it. I was just getting ready to call you. And, of course, being right there saved a lot of time and possibly saved the mix-up in communication, maybe the possibility of not even getting the message. So I made plans to visit them. And I did, and we went. We went to sunrise service. And after the sunrise service, they drove past a Baptist house, and they debated whether or not they should go into the open house breakfast that is traditionally held every Easter Sunday morning. And so they finally decided, yes, let's go in. We parked the car, we walked in, and I walked in behind them. Margaret Lindsay was standing there greeting everybody. I had never met her. And when she came to me, she says, you must be Josa. And I says, yes. She says, well, do you think it's appropriate that we have an interview about you working here? I says, fine, being Easter Sunday. So we talked a little bit, and she says, okay, fine. When can you come? So I had this job with the Baptist house, and I quit the kibbutz, and I brought all my stuff down, and I stayed with the Lindsays until I could find a place to live, and I did. I found a house right across the street from the Baptist house, a little apartment. Well, it was a room in an apartment. And all of a sudden, I stopped dead in my tracks one day when I realized what had happened, that the first part of the deal had come to pass. I found a place to live and a job in Jerusalem, and I said, I refuse to think any further about this. This is just coincidental. And the idea of meeting a man in Jerusalem, of course, was like meeting somebody out in the desert. It was that, you know, nice Christian boy in Jerusalem. How could that be? So I was there for about a month. And meantime, Bob and different people were talking about this David Bivin. And I'd never heard about him. I never saw him. And finally, one Saturday, I went to the Bible study, as we have our services on Saturday there. And here was this David Bivens sitting there in the Bible study room with all these books piled on his knees, reading them and doing a little research. And in Bible study, he gave an in-depth lesson about Zacchaeus and explaining the whole Roman tax system and why the Jews hated tax collectors and why the Romans didn't like them. And it brought such insight and light into the story of Zacchaeus that I was very much impressed. And then he came and he asked me a few questions later. And then I planned to return to the United States for 6 weeks. And he came by to, on the last night before I left, he came by to give me something to give to a friend of his named Roy Blizzard that I was to put in the mail and send to him. And we ended up talking until about 1 o'clock. And he told me a lot of his background and how he had been in youth work, and coincidentally he was a youth pastor of a church near Los Angeles called Crenshaw Christian, in which some friends of mine had just taken over. Apparently after he had left, some friends of mine had taken over the youth work there, and I knew the music director and all the people there, and we had also crossed paths apparently several times. We both attended the youth department at Hollywood First Presbyterian Church and different things like this, but never meeting each other. So I went on to the United States, and I came back on a Thursday, and the following Saturday he called me and asked me out. And then he stated that he was going to be my Hebrew teacher. And this was the end of July, so all of August he was my, quote, Hebrew teacher, end of quote. And in between he'd take me to the old city to visit some coin collectors and all these exciting things that we did on Saturday afternoons. And then he wouldn't let me pay for the lessons, so I thought, well, he'd probably enjoy a nice meal. Being a bachelor, I knew that he was eating out of cans and things. So I'd prepare the basic seven, you know, just vegetables and meat and salad and just what we would eat at home. And at the end of August, he proposed. And so we had 1 month left in September. He didn't have to work or go to school. And we planned our wedding, and October 1st we were married. That was 2 months that we knew each other. I don't usually recommend that people get married after 2 months, but in our case the Lord allowed it, and it was for a reason, and it was the best thing for us at that point.
And so, let me go back to the questions that I asked Joseph when I first became interested. I cornered her at the Baptist House bookstore where she was working because I wanted to ask her two or three questions. And the questions that I asked her were, what do you think about Jews? What do you think about Israel? What do you think about the Jewish people? And her answers were so right on, so accurate, so good, in line with my thinking, that I was sold right then. So actually, we dated for about a month, and then I proposed, and a month later we were married.
We were married October 1st, 1969, and a year later, October 10th, 1970, our son was born in Jerusalem. And so it came to pass, this deal I made with the Lord. And even to this day, I am in awe how it came to pass and how it all worked out. And as I had shared the steps with our pastor's wife, Margaret, she too was very excited to see this thing happen. And since then, we've been in Jerusalem, and we're involved, very much involved with the activities of the Baptist congregation, and our son is attending a Hebrew school. We live in a nice village with neat Israeli neighbors, and there are also some believers living there. And that's just about where we are now. We've been there 11 years, and I guess we'll be there a few more years.
Our son. I might add that our son's name is Natan, and he studies in Ein Kerem at the district school, studies in Hebrew, and we also teach him English and try to help him learn to write and read in English as well as in Hebrew. We attend the Baptist congregation, the West Jerusalem Baptist congregation in Jerusalem, which is a unique Southern Baptist congregation. We meet on Saturday mornings. We sing the Shema, the Hear, O Israel, Shema Yisrael in Hebrew. We have Hebrew songs, and much of our service is conducted in Hebrew. Joseph, I'd like to ask you one other question. It's kind of a difficult question, but why do you live in Israel?
I'm asked that question quite often, and I still have trouble answering it. The only way I can really answer it is I think of the question, why do we eat? And I think that we eat for two reasons. One, we have to stay alive. And secondly, we enjoy eating. It's a pleasure. And I think this is the same feelings I have about living in Israel. It's something I had to do, something that was on me since I was a child, and as I grew up, realizing what it was, and the desire to go there and seeing it happening. And then I enjoy living there. I'm happy there. It's a difficult place to live. Life is not easy. We have a whole different set of stress problems that Americans have, I believe.
Americans don't have.
The Americans don't have. We have a different life there. But I'm happy there, and I feel this is where God wants me, and I hope I can stay there as long as He wants me there.
Hebrew is the only dead classical language which has ever been revived. Today, it is the language of 3 million modern Israelites. Had Hebrew continued to develop in post-biblical times as a spoken language, it would probably have changed into a language as far removed from biblical Hebrew as modern Italian is from Latin, or as modern Greek is from ancient Greek. Both classical Latin and Greek are unintelligible to contemporary Italians and Greeks. While modern Hebrew may diverge from biblical Hebrew in the future, it is a process which will take centuries. Today, the differences between biblical and modern Hebrew are far less than the differences between modern English and the Elizabethan English of Shakespeare's time. Today, there is a revival of interest in Hebrew in America. Thousands of Americans and Canadians are studying Hebrew, and a new Hebrew course, Fluent Biblical and Modern Hebrew, is making it possible to learn Hebrew quickly and easily. The developing American interest in Hebrew is actually a revival of a tradition which existed in colonial America. Governor William Bradford, leader of the Pilgrim Fathers at Plymouth, wrote of the longing desire to see with my own eyes something of that most ancient language and holy tongue. He confessed to being, quote, refreshed to have seen some glimpse thereof, as Moses saw the land of Canaan afar off. Excerpts of Bradford's Hebrew exercise book have been preserved to this day. In early American universities, the study of Hebrew was highly recommended and sometimes a required part of the curriculum. Ezra Stiles, 18th century president of Yale, corresponded in Hebrew with a rabbi of Hebron, 20 miles south of Jerusalem. Traces of this early American interest in Hebrew are found in the Hebrew inscriptions on the official seals of Yale, Columbia, and Dartmouth universities. Fluent Biblical and Modern Hebrew can be obtained at your bookstore or by writing me, David Biven, Box 672, Drumright, Oklahoma, zip code 74030. Fluent Biblical and Modern Hebrew is a totally self-teaching home study course. There is a beautiful illustrated book and 6 self-teaching cassettes. The cassettes are revolutionary in approach. Self-testing has been built in so that the student cannot fail. Each of the 16 chapters of Fluent Biblical and Modern Hebrew, Book 1, has 6 lines of a continuing modern play set at the time of King Saul. The conflict of the period was both technological and political. The Philistines monopolized the working of iron and wouldn't permit the Israelites any iron weapons. Only Saul and his son Jonathan had iron swords in all the land of Israel. Military insecurity created a leadership crisis. Should the Israelites accept a king, Saul, or continue to depend on judges who would, in time of need, arise and save the people of Israel from their oppressors. Two Bible passages, 1 Samuel 13, chapter 13, verses 19 through 20 and 22, and Judges chapter 2, verses 18 through 19, define the conflict and are the sources for the Book 1 play, which is entirely in idiomatic modern Hebrew. In fluent Biblical and modern Hebrew, every word and sentence is explained and translated into English not once, but with three separate translations: idiomatic, literal, and explanatory. New words are introduced on tape, syllable by syllable, word by word, phrase by phrase, sentence by sentence. The student participates in all taped conversations with Israeli actors in Hebrew. Students learn six dialogue sentences with each chapter. The vocabulary of the dialogues is correlated to the vocabulary of the selected Bible passages. Exercises are all variations of the dialogue sentences. Review is built in, with newly learned words reappearing again and again in this scientifically graded method. The tape masters were produced in Jerusalem. As actors, we used the finest Israeli radio announcers with the unusually biblical names of Yitzhak Eitan, Isaac Eitan, Yehudit ben Yaakov, Judas, son of Jacob, and Malachi Chizkiah, Malachi Hezekiah. If you would like to learn fluent biblical and modern Hebrew, send us your check for $59.95. We'll rush you this revolutionary course. Remember, if you don't agree that this is the fastest, easiest, and most interesting way to learn a language, return Book 1 and the 6 cassettes, and we'll refund every penny you paid.